the GP Plus Careers Podcast.
Are you a GP hoping to diversify your career? Perhaps you've got a passion for women's health or have ambitions to be an expedition GP. Or maybe you've just always wondered, what would it be like to be a GP working in a prison? Well, this will hopefully be the podcast for you. My name's Sophie Lumley. I'm a First Five GP in the West Midlands and also a training programme director. I certainly fell into the above category, and I was keen to start this podcast to find out about the breadth of career options available to me, my colleagues and my trainees. I've been lucky enough to interview fellow GPs who've had some of these extra roles. They've told me what their role involves, how they got there, and the tips and advice that they have for those hoping to follow in their footsteps. I really hope you enjoy listening and feel as inspired as I have in speaking to them. I'm really pleased that today I have with me Amina Al-Yassin, who is a GP with an interest in child health. So this is, I think, going to be a really interesting one for lots of people. I certainly get asked by trainees all the time how they can expand their interest in paediatrics, having really loved their paediatric rotation or having done some work in paediatrics before. So over to you, Amina. Can you tell us a little bit about what your role as a GP in child health involves?
So yeah, as you said, I'm Amina Al-Yassin. I'm a First Five GP. I CCT'd about 4 years ago, and I'm based in Brent in Northwest London. And I've got one of those what you call varied portfolio careers. So for four sessions a week, I work as a salary GP in a large surgery in Northwest London. And then for two sessions a week, I work with Barnardo's, the UK's largest children's charity, working on developing really exciting models of health and social integrated care for them. And then I also work one session a week as the clinical lead for children's services in our borough in Brent in Northwest London. So it's a busy week. And as the years have gone by, it has become more and more child focused.
That sounds like, as you say, a really varied portfolio and a really nice balance, actually, between the sort of GP side of things and the more child health side of things. So I'm sure lots of people have heard of Barnardo's. Can you tell us a little bit more about what sort of activities you're doing for them when you're working on those sessions in the week?
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of people get really curious about that because a GP and Barnardo's and a charity, like, how does that work? So I guess the first thing to say is that's not a clinical role. I'm not seeing any patients in that part of the week. It's very much a leadership and a strategic role where we look at how can we, as a large charity with lots of experience in working with disadvantaged families and working with areas of social inequality, how can we best contribute to the ever-evolving, ever-complex health and social care system? And in many areas, that includes things like developing models, which can then be commissioned to provide support. So, for example, we recently were part of an NHS England pilot where we put family support workers into accident and emergency in seven different hospitals. And they were working with families who come to emergency care who may not really need to have presented to an urgent care setting, helping with things like health education, health literacy, helping families to work out where more appropriate sources of support may be. Or like another project I've worked on with Barnardo's is around health promotion and creating lots of different videos and educational materials for families and for practitioners about how to manage common minor childhood illnesses. So yeah, it's a really varied role. And I love the fact that, as you said, it's the week is sort of interesting and varied and balanced. And I love that with my Barnardo's role, it feels like I'm able to take that sort of step back from direct clinical care and to really think about the bigger picture.
That sounds really interesting and gives a nice outline of the sort of different activities. Really useful to hear examples of where your sort of GP and paediatric knowledge kind of gets fed into charity leadership roles. So tell us a little bit about your role in Brent Children's Services and how that sort of fits into your week.
This is my newest role and also my most senior role within the NHS. I've been doing it for about 6 months now. So I'm the clinical lead for children's services in Brent. And this is a wide portfolio. It includes all the sorts of things, all the bits of child health care that the local authority would be involved in as well. So that's everything from having a look at asthma care across the borough, to setting up child health hubs and neighbourhood multidisciplinary teams in the borough, to thinking about our special educational needs provision and preparing for the regular CQC and Ofsted inspections there, to thinking about continence care and, you know, how to set up a continence service for the children in our area. So it's been a really, really varied role, and it's been a really steep learning curve, but it's been one that I have really enjoyed so far.
And I suppose that sounds like a huge amount to fit into one session a week. What do you mostly, so it sounds like you're involved in lots of advisory capacities. What do you tend to find yourself doing for that session? Because one session, I know for lots of GPs, won't feel like very much, but with a huge potential portfolio of activities. How do you fill your time in that session? How does it work out?
I mean, the very honest truth is that it's a, you know, you are paid for one session, but often this work does overspill, and it often takes, you know, much more time than that every single week. But the time is usually spent, it's spent in a variety of different ways. I go to more meetings than I could ever count for or ever have wanted to be a part of. Like, definitely meetings are a much bigger part of my week now than they've ever been before. But a lot of the bit that gets me really excited is the strategic bit. So that's when you can take a step back and really take a look at the borough as a whole and really think about where are our, you know, what are our population health needs? What are the resources that are available to us? And in an ever pressurized environment where, you know, money isn't growing on trees, how can I, you know, shift and adjust and think creatively with the resources that I have available to me to sort of create solutions and fill those gaps. So I'd say that the role involves lots of collaboration between lots of different organizations, be it primary care, be it PCNs, be it voluntary and charity sector organizations that are working in the borough, be it our amazing Brent Health Matters team, which is a team that are specifically focused on health inequalities in Brent. There's lots of collaboration and lots of conversations.
Amazing. And I'm sure people are sat there thinking, wow, first 5 GP, but with clearly very senior roles under your belt and getting involved in a huge variety of leadership activities. Can you tell us a little bit about your career journey? How did you become to be such a sort of advocate and expert, I suppose, in child health?
That's a really good question. And you've just made me take a moment to reflect and think, because the truth is that it was a really, really curly path. You know, it was a really curly path full of twists. After medical school, I actually first went into pediatric training, and I did that for a number of years. I did my membership exams there, and I absolutely loved pediatrics. But then I made the decision to leave pediatrics and to move to general practice. But I think that love of working for children and with children never really left. I think that also, interestingly, you know, becoming a mum quite early on in my career journey between F1 and F2 also definitely had an impact. So I've always been, you know, the thing that fires me up, the thing that gets me up in the morning is that idea that children, no matter who they are born to, no matter where they are born, should have equal opportunities to flourish and to thrive. And so I think a combination of motherhood and pediatrics and all the amazing stuff that we see in general practice every day is what led me to, you know, make a series of decisions, which has brought me to where I am now.
And I suppose it's really interesting, actually, you've gone for the sort of leadership route in child health, fitting nicely with your clinical GP now. Do you do, or have you along the way, or do your GP training, done any clinical paediatrics or kept any clinical bits of paediatrics going or been tempted to?
Right after I finished my GP training, I actually did a spin fellowship. So for anyone who hasn't heard of these spin fellowships, it was a scheme to sort of improve retention in general practice by allowing GPs to take some time, one or two sessions a week, to develop a special interest or an extended role. And I was really lucky to be given the opportunity to develop a spin fellowship myself. And I approached our local CAM service, so our Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service, and asked if I could work with them. And I did that for 2 years. And that was really, really interesting work. That was very much frontline clinical CAMS work. It was everything from triaging GP referrals as they came in, to doing neurodevelopmental assessments, to starting and titrating antidepressant medications. It was the range of presentations that came to CAMS. And I really enjoyed that work. But I found that what I was actually enjoying even more was the education side and the project management side and the thinking. I can see that this is, I can see that there's a CAMS crisis. I can see that the numbers that are being referred to us are huge and ever increasing. And the children and young people are waiting for longer and longer to come and see us. How can we try and work on that problem at its source rather than have to wait until they are in the clinic room with us? And I think that's why I eventually moved from that clinical role, which I really did enjoy, to the leadership role, where I now am working again with that CAMS team, but on a very different level and on a different, a different set of issues.
And that's, I suppose, another, you're not the only one who's been lucky enough to have fellowships that provide that protected time, because I think that's so important when you're sort of starting out with an interest, is having the headspace to sort of develop that and be supported in that role. For those sort of sat there thinking, well, I've got a real interest in child and adolescent health, but I haven't done any paediatrics training, I haven't done any formal psychiatric training, but I'm a GP. Do you think that sort of role in CAMS that you had necessitated having done paediatrics or psychiatric training at all before? Or is it something that if other GPs were interested in developing, there'd be an opportunity to get involved in, or if you approach the right people could get involved in CAMS regardless?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There were no sort of essential criteria in terms of qualifications or training that you needed to have done before. And I think that's so often the case, isn't it? I think as I progress on in my career, I realize that the things that really, really count aren't so much the certificates and the qualifications and all of that. It's much more the learning that you develop on the job. It's how you use the skills that you have already gained by being a GP. And I'm, by the way, a strong believer that GPs are the most amazing type of doctor. How do you use those skills and bring them into this clinical role? And then the enthusiasm that you bring to your role, the holistic perspective that you bring into the role as a GP, as someone who is equally well versed in physical health as mental health, in adults as in children. It really is quite a unique position to be in. I think that counts for more than anything. And I think that, more than anything, it's about your experience, your willingness to learn, and also your ability to go and speak to people who are doing things that you want to do, and to really get their advice and get their support and see what opportunities they may be aware of.
And did you find working in that CAMS service that they were fairly receptive to having a GP in that sort of clinical role, seeing CAMS patients? Because I suppose they're, as aware as we are that there's a sort of crisis in provision of CAMS care, but we don't have training, and you didn't have specific training in psychiatry. Did you find that they were understanding of that and supportive, and that you still got a lot out of the role?
Yeah, I mean, the Brent CAMS team are really, really lovely. They're innovators. They like to try new things. They're open to new ideas. And they were very receptive to that role. And, I think it's sometimes about also working within your limits and working within your boundaries. So, for example, I know that, you know, as a sole GP working in a CAM service, I would never, let's say, start or initiate an antipsychotic for a child by myself. However, I'm also aware that I am, you know, if I'm doing an ADHD clinic and a child has got an unusually elevated blood pressure, I may be in a better position to offer advice or thought about that than some of my CAMS colleagues may be. So it really is about that multidisciplinary team working and knowing that if you are a GP that is working in a specialist service, you're not replacing a specialist, you're not an alternative for the specialist. You are a specialist in your own right, and you will be providing a different package of skills and experience and support to that clinic. And maybe not everywhere is ready for that. Maybe not everywhere is receptive to that. But I've actually seen it popping up more and more. You know, I've seen areas where you now have GPs who are working in ADHD clinics. I recently saw adverts for GPs in CAM services. So this is becoming, it is becoming a thing.
Awesome. That's really great to hear. Because as you say, I think you'd struggle to find a GP who isn't acutely aware of waiting lists for ADHD assessments and CAMS review for children that they look after in their area. Just a bit of a sort of off the wall question, but just because you're very uniquely placed to think about it with your background in paediatrics, I get asked a lot by trainees who say, you know, I'm really interested in peds, but I'm conscious of the fact that GPs have to do a certain amount of peds. We all have to be able to deal with, you know, acutely unwell children, you know, cow's milk protein intolerance, you know, basic common presentations of childhood illness, know a bit about vaccinations, be able to deal with constipation, and know a little bit about learning disabilities along the way. Can you see where somebody who has an interest in paediatrics but no specific training could develop a further clinical interest in paediatrics alongside their GP work that wasn't in CAMS?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is a huge scope for this. So I think one thing to remember is, you know, a large proportion of the patients that we see every day are children. And so even just in your normal day-to-day work as a GP, you will be exposed to a really large variety of pediatric presentations. One of the things that I'm really excited in my clinical lead role at the moment at the development of the child health hubs. And so it's definitely worth asking in your area to see if this is available. These are clinics which are run by pediatricians and GPs together in the same room, out of a community setting, usually a GP practice, and where families get a longer appointment and they get to see a pediatrician and a GP together, benefiting from both of their specialist input. And these clinics have always shown really good outcomes in terms of patient satisfaction and reducing waiting times for seeing a specialist. And so if you have a child health hub in your area, it would be really worth reaching out to them to see if you could sit in on those clinics or, you know, be a part of running those clinics. And as well as the face-to-face clinics, these hubs also usually offer a virtual MDT, which should be attended by a wide range of professionals. So health visitors, school nurses, therapies, acute pediatrics, community pediatrics. The exact mix will depend on the hub and on the area, but attending those MDTs would also be a really great place to learn.
Amazing. That's really salient advice. And I'm sure, you know, that's the kind of thing that's being set up in lots of ICBs and local authorities around the country. So certainly somewhere for people to start looking or asking about. Thinking about your career journey, as you say, it's been a bit curly-whirly, but obviously you have had some specific training in paediatrics when you were a paediatric trainee, but then went into child and adolescent mental health. Can you see for yourself or did you or recommend for others any other specific training you'd recommend people doing along the way if they wanted to develop an interest in child's health?
As you said, I started off in pediatric training, so I did my MRC PCH examinations. However, there is also a diploma in child health, which is open to doctors who are not pediatric trainees. And I know lots of people who've done that and who have found that to be really interesting. As I said, it's not a prerequisite for becoming a GP with special interest or extended role in pediatrics. However, if you've got the time, if you've got the willingness, and if you've got the interest, it's definitely something worth looking into. I also did, when I was doing my SPIN fellowship, I did a diploma in child and adolescent mental health, and I found that to be really interesting. Again, it was a large time commitment. However, shorter sort of CPD courses are available too. And I love the Royal College of GP One Day Essentials courses. I recently delivered some child and adolescent mental health training on that as part of a whole day of workshops around the subject. And so there's lots of good stuff that's available. And I think depending on the time you have available, there will be everything from an hour-long course to a year-long commitment.
Great. That's really helpful advice, because as you say, the one day essentials are really good, but I suppose it depends how far you want to take it and what time commitment you have. And, you know, I think it's really useful to hear that it's not a prerequisite. You don't have to start off with a diploma and then only get into the experiential side of things from there. You build the interest, and then if the learning alongside it helps, then that's a sensible place to go looking. And particularly, I suppose, if you've got a fellowship or something that might offer some funding alongside it. What for you are the main benefits of your role as a GP with a specific interest in child health?
I think the benefits are in different categories. So, for example, to me personally as a GP, the benefit is that this gives me a much more varied working week. You know, I'm always really happy to be sat in clinic, seeing real patients, because I'll have missed them after, you know, a week of meetings and of doing things that seem important but far removed from direct patient care. So having that sort of portfolio career and variety definitely keeps working life interesting and exciting. I think also depending on the kind of person you are, for me, I am a big picture person. And so I really like the idea that I can be working at Barnardo's, I can be working at Brent and working on population health. And that, you know, that energizes me. However, I still also need to know the names and faces of people who I've managed to impact too. And I think had I not had some patient contact in the week, I would have miss that greatly. And so I think having that sort of mix of leadership work and clinical work has been really, really energizing and good for my own sort of resilience and job satisfaction. I think looking at it from another way, I think for my patients, there's a huge benefit of me having this varied career as well. So I'll give you an example. I was in clinic the other day and a mother came with her 5-month-old baby who had severe eczema and a cough. And through speaking to them, it transpired that they were in temporary accommodation. There was severe mold in the accommodation, and the mum had really been struggling to get in touch or to get this issue escalated. And because I work with the local authority and I know the housing teams and I know the mold pathway and I know about the London Damp and Mold checklist, I was able to bring in that knowledge and those connections to, you know, tell her and advise her about the right, you know, the best ways to escalate this. And I'm often, you know, called upon by my colleagues to let them know about what services exist in our local area and where we can, you know, where should we send patients if they're still on the CAMHS waiting list, but they need some support in the interim. Like having this lens has really helped me be aware of what's out there. And I think that that's filtered through to my patients. And finally, I think having, for the organizations that I work with, I think having a GP on the team has been really helpful, because I think GPs are really skilled at being pragmatic and real life. And like, I think we're really well connected to like the realities and the hardships of life for our patients. And, you know, we're good at problem solving very quickly. And so I think for the teams that I work with, having a GP on board has been helpful too. So I think there are many benefits and they extend beyond the personal.
Amazing. It certainly sounds like you have a very sort of symbiotic relationship between the different roles that you have. Are there any downsides for you or some that you could foresee of being an GP with an interest in child health?
I think maybe not the GP with a special interest in child health, but in general, you know, I think, you know, as GPs, as doctors, we tend to be people who want to do really well at the roles that we take up. And I think being a portfolio GP and having more than one or more than two, or in some cases more than three roles, it does mean that, you know, it can sometimes be a bit of a challenge to keep all that work within those working hours, to make sure that you're getting enough of your, you know, your downtime, make sure that, you know, work isn't encroaching into your evenings and in your family time. I think that's a common issue that's faced by lots of us. But I think that having that sort of self-awareness and having that, you know, just keeping tabs on it and trying your best to block out time for the other things in life that are important is key.
Yeah, that's really helpful advice. I think that's the danger, isn't it? With having the more interest you have, these things leak into each other, and you know, strict boundaries with yourself as well as who you work for it can be really important. So I'm sure there's lots of people sat there thinking, you know what, I've got some really helpful advice here, and I'm feeling really inspired. I'd love to have an extended role in child health, paediatrics, or child and adolescent mental health. Where would you tell people to start looking? I think your advice about thinking about child health hubs is a really good one, because I'm sure that that's something that people may not think of, thought about. But have you got any other places, networks, advice, things that people might not have thought of that could get them along that pathway?
Yeah, so as you said, the child health hubs, and just being aware of what your local arrangements are. So, you know, in many areas, if you're able to speak to the paediatricians or to the CAMHS consultants, if you have that pre-existing relationship, or if that relationship could be made, can often be really, really helpful. I think also myself personally, I've really benefited from being part of one of the RCGP special interest groups, so the Adolescent Health Special Interest Group. And there are lots of these special interest groups. There's, you know, one for health inequalities, there's one for neurodiversity. There are many. And you'll often find that they are full of GPs who share the same interest as you and have the same sort of ideas. And they're often very aware of opportunities and of vacancies or of ways that you could help or projects that need support. So definitely being part of that RCGP SIG has been a real help to me. And I would advise that you look to see if there's a special interest group in the area that you are interested in.
Amazing. Yeah, I think lots of people have said that actually, you know, joining a network of like-minded and interested people just it's so difficult to predict what you're going to get out of it. But it often is just the people you meet, and it opens doors and just gets you thinking about what sort of opportunities there might be. And also, you know, the kind of commitment that you might need to it and where it might fit in with your roles. I certainly feel inspired. As I started by telling you, I've got very limited extra knowledge in child and adolescent health. So it's been really interesting to hear about your role and career journey. And I'm sure you will go far. You've done an enormous amount of really interesting stuff. And I can't believe you're only a first five GP. We're asking people to end on their highlight or best moment of their time in their extended role. So would you mind sharing yours with us?
Maybe I'll share something that happened recently, which is that it was going to sound really geeky to start with, but in our clinical lead roles recently, we were thinking about the locally enhanced services that we want to develop for our area. And it was just I really, really enjoyed that process. You know, looking at our population health needs, we had recently had an asthma death in our borough, and to be able to like use that You know, use that really sad event as an opportunity to improve services and to make a difference as a direct result of having, you know, found a problem within the system was a really impactful moment. And so as a result of that, we developed a childhood asthma Les for Brent, which we are going to be launching really soon. And I it made me feel like, oh, this is why I do this. It's because when I see a problem, instead of being really sad about it, I can try and find ways to make a difference in that system. And I'm looking forward to running these clinics soon and to, you know, meeting the families, to, you know, reassessing their asthma care and to then evaluating and seeing if it actually makes a difference.
Amazing. What a nice note to end on. And as you say, turning what is a tragedy into that something that is going to benefit others and really using your clinical experience to drive forward change. So thank you so much for joining me today. As I say, I certainly feel inspired. And I think there's lots of people out there who really do like working with children and the children they interact with in their GP role. And I'm sure are sat there thinking, well, how could I expand that? And who in my area should I be talking to? So thank you very much for giving up your time.
Thank you so much, Sophie. Thank you for having me.
We hope that this careers podcast has motivated and inspired you to explore the variety of career options available as a GP. Speak to your appraiser, your local training program directors, or perhaps join our RCGP mentoring program for further support to diversify your career. Thanks for listening and good luck.
The GP Plus Careers Podcast.